Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's May 3rd, 2012, and this is episode 396, and it's brought to you today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse people.
Good morning.
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Two more sleeps until the Kentucky Derby. I swear, I love this time of year. Between Rolex last week and the Derby this week, it's like a horsey Super Bowl. You know, it's just there's so much to talk about, so many good stories. And they have now officially, Glenn, they have drawn the post positions for the Derby. So it is becoming more and more real. Yeah, would you like to hear... what was the post position that you said? No, by the way, I don't believe your list, but there was one post position you said that had never won. Had a horse that won.
Wasn't it like number 13 or 9 or something? Or had won very little? Number 9 had won very little.
I think you said number 15 has never won.
I have to look that up. Let me take a look here. I'll look for that in the meantime because you're right.
I have a hard time believing that a horse has not won out of one particular post position ever, and I've never heard about it. And this
here it is. It says that number 9 post is the worst in the top 10 with only 4 victories and only 4 wins from the number 13 gate.
Okay. Okay, I was a little worried because my horse, Gemologist, took the 15th spot. And,
coming from the outside. Where did I'll have another come in? That's all I care.
Well, let me go ahead and I'll go through the list. Because all of our listeners picked their favorite horses by name. We're doing a little contest. Pick your favorite Derby horse by name. And if you haven't entered, go to our Facebook page and just write which horse you like the best. Because of their name only, and then you're going to win a Horse Radio Network hat. Now, post position number 1, and this was what?
Let me clarify that. If the horse wins, they'll win a hat.
If you get out there and you run the mile and a quarter, a mile and an eighth faster than any horse, you're going to get a hat, and you're going to get arrested. So,
yeah.
Thanks. I don't think anybody was confused about that,
Glenn.
Number 1 post position, the inside, is always a point of contention. Nobody ever wants to draw the one in a field of 20, and that goes to Daddy Long Legs, and that was one of our listeners' picks. So Daddy Long Legs, number 1. Number 2 post position was Optimizer. In the 3 spot, Take Charge Indy, which is Calvin Burrell, and that's probably where he wants to sit so then he can run over everybody at the end and bust through and get to the finish line. Number 4, Union Rags, as it's my favorite horse, and Julian Lepereau, the 4th spot.
That's a good spot.
He wasn't very happy about it at first.
Really?
But now he's starting to like it a little bit more. He wanted something a little more in the middle, I think. The 5 post position is Doulahan. In the 6th spot, Bodemeister. Rousing
we got Union Rags, Doulahan, and Bodemeister right beside each other?
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's going to be the area to watch for sure. In the 7 hole, Rousing Sermon. Number 8, Creative Cause. 9, Trenberg, and number 10, Daddy Knows Best. Now, that's the first 10. Then you've got 10 more. It's such a big field. In the 11th spot, you got Alpha. 12 is Perspective. 13 went the day well. Hanson drawing the number 14 spot.
Wow,
15, My Horse. Yeah, it's outside, but still, they're very pleased with that spot, actually, because you're kind of clear of the traffic on the rail. Number 15 is Gemologist, and the other Todd Pletcher horse is El Pedrino. He's at number 16. You notice I haven't said your horse yet, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's even racing at this point. Go ahead.
Number 17, the 17 post position for the Kentucky Derby is Done Talking. The 18 hole is Sabercat. Number 19 spot, Glenn. In the 19 hole is I'll Have Another, and that's Martin Gutierrez. Sorry, buddy.
All right, and well, then, I'll Have Another better keep another before he gets to the track.
And we've got number 20, Liaison, is in the 20 spot. Now, I want you to remember that there was one particular horse that won the Kentucky Derby not too long ago from the 20 hole, and that was Big Brown. So it can be done. And actually, you're clear of the traffic. I'll Have Another. Actually, I don't mind the 19 spot. I like the 15 a little better for Gemologist, but you may be okay.
Now, it says AE. There's an AE. What's an AE? Is Maya Donis is AE?
That's the alternate entry, just in case any of these horses scratch. The AE, the alternate entry, that's Maya Donis, will take that spot.
Okay, yeah, got it. So she's the backup.
Yeah.
But so you're if you're Maya Donis's people, you're just praying somebody comes up lame, aren't you? Praying.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but that's probably what they're doing. They're going to pull a little bit of a skating incident and take a baseball bat in somebody's knee. Nancy Kerrigan, look out!
Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show? We have a busy one.
On today's Back on Track Thursday edition, what do you do, trying to trip me up, Glenn? We'll have four or five daily Derby factoids, as usual, followed by Fencing for Dummies featuring Jason from Field Guarding Fencing Systems. And the fun continues as our friend Lisa Slade stops by from the Chronicle of the Horse for a fashion comparison. Rolex Kentucky three-day event versus 2012 World Cup Finals from Germany. Stay tuned for the fracas. That should be really interesting.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I have a daily one. Mine stays with the racing theme and goes out to our friend Shauna, who, if you remember right, is our standardbred racer, and she has this horse named Wildfire that is on fire. And Wildfire has won again. I wrote back to her and asked, I want to find out what Wildfire's record is, because this horse just seems to win everything it races. So congratulations to Shauna. Sounds like you got your own hot one there in Wildfire, but let us know what the record is for Wildfire. I'd love to know that. So congratulations to Shauna, and your turn.
Well, my daily Winnie, I'm going to stick to the racing theme too, because they now have the favorite picked for the Kentucky Derby, and it's not anyone we've been talking about as far as favorites go. The horse's name is Bodemeister, and it is a Bob Baffert trained horse, and he is now sitting at 4-1, which, you know, for the Kentucky Derby, usually there's a really, really close standout favorite, and there's not this year. So once the post positions were picked, Bodemeister came out in the number one spot, even though he is running from the six hole. So his jockey, Mike Smith, of course, didn't have a jockey, so you got to pull for him a little bit. And then the second favorite, the 9-2 second choice, is Union Rags, and he drew post four. So just what you said, Glenn, that 4, 5, 6, they're all looking pretty good in the odds. So I like
the
fact that my horse.
Who's the long shot?
The long shot is currently two horses. We've got three horses now are sitting as 50-1. 50-1, which, if you remember, Mind That Bird won at 50-1. And we've got in the number two hole, Optimizer is 50-1. We've also got Trenneberg is 50-1, and he's in the nine hole. And also, if you wanted to, Done Talking is 50-1, and so is Liaison, who's in the 20 hole. So if you want to do a superfecta that will pay you more money than you will ever spend in the rest of your life, go ahead and do the 2 and the 7. You know, I should do this. I'm sitting giving y'all advice. 17 and 20. Could you imagine?
And I got later on in the show, Jamie, after toward the end of the show, I have the 10 fun ways to pick a Kentucky Derby horse without knowing racing. So going to find out how many of these you and I have done. We'll find that out later in the show. Well, that's interesting. I love the picture here. When they apparently drew the placings and who was going to be in what hole, instead of putting it up on a big screen, they kind of have a young Vanna White in front of this Kentucky Derby board that hangs up the silk colors below the number of the gate. No high tech for that racetrack, huh?
You know, I wanted that job so bad, and my boobs just were not big enough.
Big enough? Probably.
And now, Glenn, I would like to point out that I just said that the Derby favorite goes off at 4-1, and that the Union Rags, the second favorite, is 9-2. And you typed to me that Union Rags is higher at 9-2. Do the math, and that would be 4.5-1. If you were going to do the math. So you've got 4-1 and then 4.5-1. That's why they say 9-2, because they're not going to say 4.5-1. So your math is a little bit off, honey, and I just wanted to point that out.
Let me think about this a second.
As I'm doing this, I say 4-1, and you're like, no, you're typing to me. No,
no, let me know. I was thinking about your math there a second. I guess 9-2 is 4-2. Yeah, you're probably right.
You know,
you're probably right.
It's a day of admitting our mistakes. And I have to tell you, because I made a mistake yesterday. And since you're admitting you're wrong, I'm going to admit that I'm wrong. It just didn't sit well with me. I said yesterday that the second fastest Derby was Busaichi Pegasus, and I was wrong. I was totally wrong, and I want to recoup my mistake there. But we got some stuff to talk about before I get into the list of the 10 fastest Derbies in history. Of course, we all know who number one is, but we'll go through the other nine. How about that?
That sounds great, and I have a lot of audio for you today. I promised some audio from past races, so we have that for you as well. A lot of stuff to do. But first, let's get through some housekeeping stuff. Really Bad Ads is back tomorrow on pre-Derby Day, and we also, coming tomorrow, I'll tell you what the prize is here in a second, but I don't want to forget to let you know that Mucho Macho Man's people, he is running tomorrow, and we'll have an interview with them as well. They're out at Churchill again, so we'll talk to them as well, Patty and Dean and Kathy, the trainer. But our Really Bad Ads prize this week is Redmond Rock gift pack. Our horse absolutely loves Redmond Rocks. As a matter of fact, his Redmond Rock is getting kind of small, and we're going to have to buy a new one because he just eats that thing like crazy. We have to control his intake of Redmond Rock because he will stand and stand and stand, and he will just devour the Redmond Rock. It's a little bit different than a regular white salt brick than you're used to. These are rocks that are just mined out of a quarry. And they have they have over 60 minerals already in them. They're not processed at all. You buy a rock. It looks like they just mined it out of a quarry. And it's good stuff. It really does the trick, and horses absolutely love it. It provides them those minerals that they need that they're not getting elsewhere. So RedmondEquine.com is the website, and your Redmond Rocks gift pack will be to you if you submit the best Really Bad Ad. Jennifer has gotten some, but we need some more. So send them to Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. Get on Craigslist today. Look for those really bad horse ads, the bad anything to do with an animal or anything to do with horses. If it's a bad ad, go ahead and send it to us.
Yes, and also for tomorrow, we are looking for a listener to play in the Derby Trivia Contest. Now, You guys, I need somebody to play. Because if not, I'm going to make Glenn play the Derby trivia. And it would just be ugly. It would just
be
like,
it will be.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And so I really want...
I'll play against a listener.
Oh, that's
that way they
what
have
we're
a good chance
right
of winning. Yeah, that's right.
Love it. Love it. Now, you're going to have to upload me, Glenn, a little buzzer that's like ding, 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 ding for the right answer. And then you're going to have to upload me a wrong one that goes, argh. And then you can hear that in your sleep a million times because that's all you're going to hear is, wrong. But we're going to play the listener. That sounds like a good idea. Just email me, jamie@horseradionetwork.com, if you want to play in our Derby trivia contest, and you're going to win a prize. It's going to be like $1 million is going to be the prize. $1 trillion is the prize. If you go ahead and email me, jamie@horseradionetwork.com. Glenn, can you cover that?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll just write that check tomorrow.
$1 trillion to the winner. I love it. All right.
How about something more like a Horse Radio Network hat or something more affordable?
$1 trillion. Email me at jamie@horseradionetwork.com. All right, play the audio, Glenn. Let's hear this. I'm dying to.
Well, this is Rolex. I happened to win his 20th race down there in Australia, and we didn't get a chance to play the audio. And I don't think you've heard this audio, have you yet, Jamie? You haven't heard it yet.
I have
either.
Not. No.
Just the announcer at the end is terrific. Black Caviar is huge. Let me just preface this by saying Black Caviar is huge, huge, huge in Australia. They moved one of their biggest soccer matches. They moved it back an hour because Black Caviar was going to run, and they knew they would have nobody watching soccer. So
no
that's
kidding.
How they, yeah, that's how big it is in Australia. So here's the race.
They're off. And the most anticipated race this century is underway. And Black Caviar's going to lead early from Spurcific, and Just Sybil is up there from Tabulated. Being followed along the rails by Shekinah. Further back came Lone Rock, ahead of that runner Power Princess. Second last is Sistine Angel. All fried up is last. Nolan keen to come off the pace. He allows the other two to go clear. At the 650-metre mark, it's Just Sybil down on the inside, leading from Spurcific, the outside. Black Caviar, she sits two lengths away, third from Shekinah. Then came Power Princess from Tabulated Sistine Angel. Then came Lone Rock from Valentine Miss, and last is All Fried Up. They're on the home turn. The anticipation is starting to build. Black Caviar goes up and hits the lead. On the outside, Power Princess is trying to match her. At the 250, Nolan's got a stranglehold on Black Caviar. She looks at the 30,000-strong crowd and says, geez, I'm good. No, I'm not good. I'm the best you've ever seen in the world. Black Caviar, she's better than a perfect 10. She comes on. She's 20 out of 20. Black Caviar, full lengths. Great go for six.
Woohoo! Holy cow! She's not just I'm the best in the world! Oh my god, that brought tears to my eyes and gave me goosebumps. Holy cow!
He was terrific. Wasn't that terrific?
Oh, I'm so glad you played that. She looks up at that count of 30,000 and says, I'm not going to the best in the world! Oh my god, that was awesome. That makes me very happy. Excuse me.
Yeah, that was great.
I need to compose myself. Now, we also have some audio before I get to the list of the 10 fastest derbies, because I want to just carry this on, because let's just keep going with the tears and the goosebumps. Let's hear the last five, 2000 to 2005 Kentucky Derby, Glenn.
All right. That's what I think this is, I'm hoping.
In the starting gate, and they're off in the Kentucky Derby. Record time here in the Derby. You're at the top of the stretch, and it is Congaree who has pulled out. Here comes Monarchos under a heavy drive on the far outside. Invisible Ink is there. Point given, not today. 1 furlong left. Here comes Monarchos who sweeps to the lead. He's pulling away by two. He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarchos have won.
Empire Maker far outside. It's Peace from Funny Side. Just in front, Peace rules on the inside of Empire Maker. Funny Side looking to upset the Derby. Funny Side at 12-1 wins it by a length and three quarters. They head for home. Lionheart set down to a full-out drive. The outside, here comes Smarty Jones. Smarty Jones, Lionheart digs in gamely. Smarty Jones pushing on by. Smarty Jones is taking the lead. Lionheart tough as nails. Smarty Jones is going clear. The unbeaten colt, Smarty Jones, is drawing away to win the Derby. Smarty Jones and Stewie Elliott going on to win. Smarty Jones goes on to win the Kentucky Derby.
Cheering right along with him. I'm like, go Smarty! Because I saw him this past weekend at the Kentucky Horse Park.
That's right. You did. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Did you go up and see Cigar and everybody?
Oh, my gosh. Can I just tell you how cool it was? My husband and I decided to give him a tour of the park because I did a six-month equestrian management program at the Kentucky Horse Park when I was 18. So I, wanted to show him where our classrooms were and show him all the different pieces. So I walked him up to the Hall of Champions, and they were doing the end of the show where they brought out Cigar. And it was it couldn't have been timed better. That horse walked out and posed. They were showing his races up top. They have some television screens in there now, which is such a good idea. And they broadcast the victories, and they were playing some of the races. And Cigar was named the horse of the decade in the 90s. He was just so phenomenal. And of course, he's not breeding now because he was found to be sterile after his racing career. But so he's there, and it was so funny because, as stallions will do, he was quite proud of himself and was putting it on display. And it was just so funny to watch the woman who was on the microphone scramble to try to figure out how to address that to the crowd. But the first thing he did when he walked out was he comes out and he walks to the middle of the little ring there, and he stops and he just yawns like the biggest "oh" you've ever seen. And everybody laughed. And she's like, okay, now that you've laughed at that, he's going to yawn the entire time because he likes to entertain people. He is such a showman. And he did. He would walk and pose at each one and yawn in front of everybody. It was awesome. I have more pictures of him yawning than I did of him just standing there. But then you have to kind of bring the black box out for, certain parts of him at the end of the whole thing. Because she's like, well.
So he kind of literally flipped everybody the bird?
I guess that's a way to put it. He was quite proud and was putting all parts of him on display. And I was embarrassed for the small children that were there. And she's like, he still is a stallion, and these things do happen.
Poor woman.
I know. It was awesome. It was so funny. And Chad and I just giggled the entire time. I mean, it was just like a big old, just a horse winker right there. As he's showing off to everybody. She's like, he is quite the show off, so sorry.
God, I wonder how many times. You think he does that every time, just like, if you're going to do this, I'm going to do that.
He probably yawns and drops every single time he goes out there. Why not? Oh, it's funny. All right, so the fastest derbies, before we're going to play for you the derbies from 2005 on, we've got the 138th running is this Saturday, but we're going to go through the 10 fastest in the history. Now, of course, number one, we all know Secretariat still holds the records for the fastest derby ever, and he ran it at 159 6.4. So that is the, still the track record for the mile and a quarter. Now, we just heard about Monarcos, who won the Kentucky Derby in 159.97, second fastest Derby in 2001. And he was such a long shot, and he was in 13th, and he made his way all the way up to the front. So, you know, anything can happen, Glenn, when your horse that has drawn the 19th post position, when he's in dead last, when he's in dead last, he may rally to win. Monarcos did it in fine form and still holds the second fastest Derby.
You heard that audio where the announcer said that he tied with in 159.40, he tied Secretariat. What happened was the official time came out. He ended up being at 159.97, 57 of a second slower. So that's why when the announcer said it, he said he tied, is because that was the unofficial time.
Right, right. And, you know, whether or not that happened that way, who cares? Secretariat is going to have the record forever. Some records are not meant to be broken, okay? And I'll hate any horse that runs it faster. number three, the third fastest Derby goes to Northern Dancer, and he ran it in 2 minutes flat. And he, of course, Northern Dancer, one of the most influential thoroughbred sires ever. So, you know, Monarcos, you don't really hear about really fast offspring of Monarcos. But, my God, you see Northern Dancer all over the place. Number four, the fourth fastest Derby was by Spendabuck in 1985. And he finished it with 2 minutes, .2. And then number five in 1962, we're traveling back to Decidedly, 2 minutes, .4. And he won it by 2.25 lengths. And he went off at 8-1, so not too much of a long shot. Proud Clarion, also in 1967, is the sixth fastest Derby. Number seven, we're going to hear from in just a minute, was Grindstone. Grindstone in 1996, 2 minutes and 1 second. Wow, this seems so slow now. number eight was Fusaichi Pegasus in the year 2000. He was 15th, and he rallied to come and win it by a length and a half in the final time of 2 minutes and 1 second, .12. So just 6/10 of a second slower than Grindstone did. War Emblem in 2002, we just heard from also, and won it in 2 minutes and 1 second, .13. And then Funnyside in 2003 ran the 10th fastest Derby at 2 minutes and 1 second, .19. So again, just 6/10 of a second slower than War Emblem, the one in front of him. So this horse, Funnyside, we just talked about him the other day because he is a stable pony now for his trainer. He's a pony horse. We just talked about the other horse being a pony horse. So is Funnyside. So he's still got the good life because he was a gelding.
That's right. That's correct. And so you got to meet him? I don't think I've met him out there yet. Yeah, I guess I have. Because he's been at the park for a while, right?
Yeah, he has. He was the pony horse, and then he went to the Hall of Champions. And pretty much any time you see him in his stall, all you see is his butt. Every time I've been to see him, all I see is his butt. Because he just puts his butt to the door. And he's like, screw you guys.
go look at somebody. Go look at Cigar. Cigar likes to show off. Funnyside, not so much. Whether you want to hear the 2006 through 2010 races, this starts. Of course, we have Michael Matz, who has his horse in this race, and we've talked about that at nauseum over the last 2 weeks. But, you know, we started hearing about Michael Matz with Barbaro, and this little sound clip starts with Barbaro.
Starting gate, and they're off in the Kentucky Derby. Point
determined in striking range as well at the top of the lane. And they turn for home in the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro comes roaring off the turn, opens up by three with 3/16 to run now. His entry made up the inside, showing up still in the second spot, joined by Bluegrass Cat, who's plugging away down to the final furlong, though, and it's all Barbaro. Barbaro in front by five. Very impressive. Barbaro and Edgar Prado rolling on to win Kentucky Derby 132. And they kicked it into high gear, down to the final furlong, and Street Sense goes right on by Hardspun. Street Sense has taken over and opens up here. Street Sense by two, Hardspun racing in second, but it's all Street Sense drawing away. Late charge from I'm a Wild and Crazy Guy. Street Sense and Calvin Burrell impressively in Derby 133. As they turn for home, and Big Brown makes a big move, and he takes the lead. Big Brown is opened up now by three. The Game Philly, Eight Bells, trying to run him down the final furlong. It's Big Brown. He's gone clear. Big Brown and kept the solo by four lengths. The Game Philly second on the inside, Eight Bells, but Big Brown. Big Brown is a superstar. He'll win the Kentucky Derby. Big Brown wins by five.
Picking up now, bursting through, Mind That Bird, absolute last early, Mind That Bird has skimmed the rail, a brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell, Mind That Bird is going clear in the Derby, Mind That Bird wins the Derby from last to first. Devil May Care, she is now in third. Paddy O'Prado is staying on. Dublin and Lucky Nut Lucky is weaving his way through. Racing now inside the final furlong, it's Calvin Burrell and Super Saver in front. To in second, Paddy O'Prado down the outside. Icebox is flashing home, racing up to line. Super Saver wins the Derby for Tom Pletcher and for Calvin Burrell. Burrell's third win in the Kentucky Derby. It was Super Saver who held them all at bay and took Kentucky Derby 136.
I couldn't even go past the Big Brown thing because they said the name Eight Bells in it, and I just started crying. Okay, move on.
Well, when I heard the Mind That Bird, you forget what an exciting race that was with Calvin Burrell riding that horse from dead last on the rail all the way to win that race. It was just an exciting race. I had forgotten how exciting that race was.
Oh, it really was, yeah.
And, he is riding Take Charge Indy this time and going off at 15-1, which is low odds for Calvin. Usually he's on the horse that's 50-1 plus, but he's going off at 15-1, and Take Charge Indy, you can't count that horse out in the third spot because he is going to be on the rail right where he likes to be.
Yeah, he sure is. Calvin Burrell is a hard rider. It seems like he's lived a hard life and he's a tough guy. So I don't think he will be afraid to bring that horse through again.
No, not at all. Hey, and we got Alan is calling in from the Western Radio Show. He has something he told me about yesterday that's a connection actually to the Derby, and we're going to get to that. But first, we're going to talk about our sponsor from Back on Track Products. We got to catch up with Bo over at Rolex, who is the owner of Back on Track Products. We always like having him on. He's a lot of fun. And I know that some of you heard this, some of you have not, so we thought we'd just give you a couple of minutes of our chat with Bo from Back on Track Products that we did at Rolex.
And we had another guest. Just sit down, Bo, from Back on Track. How are you, Bo?
Good
to see you.
Good to see you, guys.
Hey, where are you set up? You're over in the trades, the sponsors
no,
row?
No, way down here.
Oh, you're down here?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we are.
Well, so you're in the main, for everybody that's listening that is here, he is in the vendor section, Back on Track Products.
Correct.
In the old indoor arena.
Yeah, yes, we are. So.
Well, that's terrific. How many Rolexes have you come to?
I think it's 7 now.
7?
Yeah.
Now, you live around here, so this is easy for you, right?
No, we live in Pennsylvania.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I did like you. I emigrated.
I don't think he's originally from Pennsylvania. Something about the accent gets that away.
It's Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, we talked about a little bit yesterday, and I told him he had to pop by. You know, we talked a little bit about your favorite horse. See you at Peeler's, because he's friends with the trainer there, Glenn. So see you at Peeler's, and we talked a little bit how that she's back in action.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like she's doing good again, so that's good to see.
That is.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a great horse, one of the best, I think, I've seen out there. So
yeah, absolutely.
Do you still try and follow Spinnerbred Racing a bit?
A little bit. You know, I'm more into the show horses. That's the main, you know, that and the Western horses. Yeah, that's where we go after more, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
We have a lot of listeners that are in, that actually own racehorses and train and do the standardbred racing and harness racing, and we've developed a whole new respect for it. We've had some of them on, and it's become more fun understanding it more.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a great sport. I mean, I used to train them myself, and you know, it's a tough sport too for. You have to survive and make money.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the kind of money in it that on the thoroughbred side, the flat racing.
No, they don't. But you know, you get the good horse, you can make money. But you know, like Jim and them guys, they're good trainers, so and they have the good owners who can buy the good horses.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about, because I was looking over your product list yesterday, and being here at Rolex, there's probably some things that sell better than others here, but I was curious to know, what are some of the things that you think would be a must-have for an event horse?
Well, I will say that our blanket is our best product. Where you keep the body sound, the legs usually follow. You know, if your back gets bad, something else is going to go lame too. You know yourself, if your back... If you have bad back, your knee or hip is going to go sooner or later. And,
right.
You know, and we stop when we're hurting, but the horses go on, you know. So the blanket is the best product. But, you know, it's a little bit different than everything. And the good thing with our product is any horse can wear it. You don't have to have a race horse. You don't have to have a Olympic horse. This backyard horse can benefit from them too.
Well, thank you to Back on Track Products. You can find all of their products at backontrackproducts.com. And we appreciate them being part of the show. You know, I got to tell you, all this Derby talk and everything, and I just took a look over at Facebook. Robert Dunn, who is a regular listener to the show, just posted something on there, and I just want to read it. Okay, I'm hating whatever Facebook has done to your page. I can't see all the posts. It's making me choose from highlighted posts to friend posts from other pages, blah, blah, blah. It's really annoying. This isn't even any fun. I missed the chat between the listeners. It's now all fractured and weird. We agree.
I know.
It's
we hate
fucked.
It. Can we change it back, please? Can you change it back? Because they're not... You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have changed it. It's terrible.
No, we didn't have a choice. They changed it on us. We didn't have a choice. At the end of March,
mine?
They changed everybody. Everybody's.
My personal page didn't change.
This is fan pages. Your personal page will change. They're getting to all of them. They're rotating through all the people now, forcing changes. So one day you're going to wake up and your personal page will look like this.
No. I'll be very mad. We'll start our own Facebook. We'll do something else.
Hey, if you can do the code for it, I'd be happy to, because they just are, you know, going public and going to make about $100 billion. So, yeah, that'd be great. Just get to writing that code. Yeah. Hey, we were talking about the Derby this week, and Alan and Tammy from the Western Radio Show had a guest on they wanted to tell us about who has a connection to one of the Derby horses. So let's say good morning, Alan and Tammy. Are they
good
there?
Good morning, Brian and Jamie.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Well, good morning, Tammy. Hey, I talked to Alan yesterday, and Alan, you said that you had a guest on that ended up having a connection to one of the Derby horses.
Yeah, it's a young 9-year-old girl from Florida. Her name is Casey Oliver, and her dad, Perry Oliver, is a thoroughbred trainer, and he does a lot of work with Dale Romans, who is the trainer of Dullahan, who's running in the Derby this weekend. And that horse has been in Florida with him for a while. They shipped him up to Churchill Downs last week before, and he's on his way up there today. And little Casey Oliver is a heck of a barrel racer, and she comes from an English side of life. She's been riding since she was two. You can find out about that on the show. And she saw the light and came to the Western side.
you took a risk and actually had a couple of kids on the show this week. That's always a risk because you never know if they're going to talk or not.
Yeah. And she was,
Alan was awesome, Glenn. He can make a rock talk. He does the best interview ever.
Yeah, well, we had Madison Wagner. She's a junior rodeo queen from California, and she actually leads the youth points in ACFA, bless me, and that's American Competitive Trail Horse Association. And Tammy got her on it. And you talk about talkative. Them two got together, and I didn't get to say a word.
And that's hard.
Glenn, I mean, she's so well-spoken. Yeah. She was an awesome little cowgirl.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. But I guess I think one of my points in the thing is that, you know, there's still hope for Jamie to see the light and come from the dark side to the good side. I mean, you know, English, she's always talking about no money over there. But the little Casey Oliver girl last year at 8 years old in Ponies Over Fences qualified for the Nationals there. And where you used to live, Jim, Glenn, it's Lexington, Kentucky. She was there and finished up 12th in the world in jumping on ponies and 19th overall. And I think they have kids up to 18 in it. And her mom told me there was 400 or 500 kids up there in that deal, and quite the talent. But I thought it was cool that since y'all have been talking about the Kentucky Derby so much, that I actually had a connection on the Western show to that deal for this week.
Hey, Jamie, you're going to get Jed out and start doing barrel racing? What do you think? He might like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, thoroughbreds are they're built to make those powerful turns, those quick, you know, quick starts, spin them right around the barrel, I'll cash in, no problem.
Well, what we have to do for Jamie is the type of horse she likes. We got to find somebody that's got one that's underfed and just ready to go down the road somewhere else. And she'll go rescue it and bring it back.
We need a skinny quarter horse, and Jamie will adopt him tomorrow if we have a skinny quarter horse.
That is one thing you do not see very often. You do not see starving quarter horses too often because they survive on air.
That's true. Hey, Alan and Jamie, thank you for calling in. We do have to run here. We have to keep going. We have a lot of stuff going on in today's show, but we appreciate it. It's Western Radio Show. You can find it at horseradionetwork.com or westernradioshow.com. Thanks, guys.
Hey, from Hispania Silk, they can win some grooming products if they post pictures of dirty horses on Western Radio Show Facebook.
Wait a minute. Ah. You got to post picture. Jamie has a picture of Cigar. He was dirty over the weekend. Is that that's a different kind of dirty one.
Yeah.
No, you're talking about dirty, muddy, dirty.
Yeah, dirty, muddy, bad mane, bad tails for some free Espana Silk grooming product. It's going to be shampoos and detanglers and such as that. And also some... Some coffee from favoritecowgirlcoffee.com. Yeah.
Wow, you guys have great prices over there. Thank you, Alan.
No, they really
thank you, Sammy.
Come
all right, guys.
To the
all right.
Western stop.
We've got to go because we've got bigger names on the other line, so we got to go. See ya.
All right. We have next week, Jennifer and I did a series on fencing. We had never talked about fencing in the 3 years we've been doing the shows, and all of us have fencing, and we all put up fencing at one time or another. And, of course, when we came to Florida, we had to put up some fence because there was no fence here, and Beaker needed a place to live. So we started doing a lot of research, and we ended up going with a company. There, Jennifer did a lot of research. Let me clarify that. Jennifer did a lot of research, and we ended up going with a company by the name of Field Guardian. So we put together this little four-part series on fencing. Hopefully some of you will learn something. We certainly learned something as we were doing it. We didn't know a lot of this stuff about grounding and how important that was and all this different things that we didn't know. So let's do the first part of this, and then we'll do a part every week. This is with Jason, who is the owner and founder of Field Guardian. Well, Jennifer and I are here for the first part in our four-part series on fencing. You know, in all the years we've done the Horse Radio Network, we've really never talked about fencing. And what's the one thing that every horse owner has in his backyard?
Fence.
Fence. We all have fence. So we all have to deal with the fencing issues at one point or another, and we had that same predicament when we moved to Florida here in Ocala. And we had an extra layer of difficulty. We needed to put up a permanent temporary fence.
That's referred to as semi-permanent, Glenn.
Yeah, well, that's okay. And then we needed it to, you know, to be here for a couple of years. We're leasing this spot for a couple of years. And then we also needed to be able to take it up and take it with us if we do move. But we also needed something that was going to be strong enough that we have these huge live oak trees out in the backyard with branches and Spanish moss and everything. And, I mean, the thing is just littered with trees back there. I know because I've moved about 80 million bushels of leaves out of there in the last couple of weeks. And so we needed it strong enough that if a branch came down, it was going to stay up. It wasn't going to cause problems that way. So Jennifer said, oh, I'll get on it. She's the ace researcher here at the Horse Radio Network, and you looked at about 20 companies.
I was amazed once I really started to dig and surf how many fence companies there are out there. Because I was familiar with fencing of the semi-permanent type like we were using. Just what I saw in stores, in retail stores locally in Pennsylvania. Didn't realize there were lots out there. And I got to looking around, and there are lots and lots of fencing companies out there. And they're not all created equal, because not only did our fencing have to be semi-permanent and strong enough to withstand weather and limbs and branches, it had to be safe for my horse, and it had to be reasonably attractive. I didn't want something but ugly out there. This is a really attractive, beautiful, what I like to call distractingly beautiful neighborhood that we live in. And I wanted something that would fit in. I didn't want it to look dorky and like, you know, backwoods hot wire fencing. So I had to do a lot of surfing around, and so many of the companies, they weren't able to tick off every box, and we had to find somebody that could tick off every box, and that's a lot of boxes.
Well, I know that, just to give a little history, too, we've owned several farms over our lifetimes, big ones. We owned a 100-acre farm and a 40-acre farm, and we fenced in a lot of acres with green tea posts and hot wire. And we found that hot wire was not... Now, this is back in the day before tape, okay? This is 25 years ago when hot wire was it. The only thing you could buy at the Tractor Supply were big rolls of hot wire. And the wire would break constantly, and we'd be constantly fixing the fence.
It was rusty
and
all
it
the
was
time.
Rusty all the time. It was just a mess. And the things have come a long way since then. So,
yeah.
And we're happy about that.
Technology has moved forward. Yes.
Well, one of the companies that you checked into and that we ultimately decided to go with and have been terrific to work with is Field Guardian Fencing Systems at fieldguardian.com. And we got on the phone and we chatted with Jason, who's the founder and owner of the company. And, we worked with him, and we're going to go through some of that process and how to lay out, how you're supposed to really lay out your pastures and all the details about fencing that you don't think about till you actually go to do it. But so that's what this next four-part series is going to be. We're going to tell you some of the experiences we had, and also we're going to try and give you some helpful hints along the way so the next time you have to put something up, you have some guidance there.
That's the section that's called Don't Make This Mistake.
Yeah, because we all do. So hopefully we're going to help you not make some of those mistakes. Well, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You made this process, Field Guardian, you and your people, all of the people there, made this process so easy for us, and we learned a lot, and we want to talk about some of what we learned, because I think one of the big things that I took away from this was the resources that are available with a fencing company like yours that we didn't know we had access to. So we're going to talk about that as part of this series. But first, tell us about Field Guardian, a little bit about the history of the company.
Well, Field Guardian is a relatively new brand product for electric fence. We started back in the early 2000s. Sounds kind of funny to say that, but 2003 is when we started. And we were a young company trying to bring new and some different products to farming and the fencing industry. We've all owned our own horses and had our own farms, and so we knew what was out there, kind of like what you just said about the hot fence at Tractor Supply. And we knew there was something better, and so we started looking for something better, and we brought in products and started developing our own aluminum wire products that would not rust, that very simple, very flexible, but didn't have the rusting problems that old traditional steel wire has. And as we grew, we expanded our product base when we purchased Tipper Tie Fencing Systems out in 2008. And after that process, we grew rapidly, and Began selling more through distributorships and dealers and also online straight to retail customers. We develop a lot of new products, and we try to be a little innovative with our new product selections, try to find something a little bit different that perhaps some other companies don't already have. There's a lot of Me Too companies out there that have the same products as everybody else, and so we have those as well. We try to have some new and different products each and every year that we develop and bring to the market.
So is your specialty, like we put up the poly tape fence, and we're going to talk about how yours is a little bit different, but is your specialty the poly tape, or is it a combination of some other things as well?
Our specialty, I would probably say, is the aluminum wire predominantly. We're very strong in that. There's very few companies across the U.S. that produce it like we do. That's probably our number one characteristic. Secondly is our tapes, ropes, and poly wires, which we're very strong in and make a very good, high-quality product. All of these products are made in the U.S. Actually, most of them are made in Georgia. And because of that, we have a very good warranty on all the products, and we don't usually have to use a warranty very often as well. Many of our competitors bring product over from overseas, and the tapes and ropes just don't have the same UV inhibitors introduced during the manufacturing process that we do. They don't tend to last quite as long.
Well,
so I would say our tapes and ropes are pretty high quality.
As I said at the beginning, not all fencing is created equal.
That is correct.
But it's hard when you're first doing a project, when you buy a place or you get a place that has fencing, and maybe you just have to divide a field in half, you know? It has wooden fencing around the outsides, and you have to divide a field in half. It's the first time you're doing it. You can get lost in the millions of options.
That is correct. There's quite a few options and choices to make when you first start out.
Well, let's talk about some of the options. Who uses the aluminum wire the most? And let's try and stick with horse people here at this point. Is aluminum wire used by horse people, or do they tend to go to the poly rope and poly tape now?
Most horse people will use the poly products, the tape or the rope predominantly. A lot of the aluminum wire is used on horse farms, but most of it's used in barns or a place where horses are cribbing or rubbing where they shouldn't rub and they don't need.
So they're just putting the hot wire over the top? Or
exactly.
Yeah.
They pop them a couple of times and they learn pretty quick not to chew on the wood or anything. But most horse farms go with the poly tape probably first and rope second. And most times poly tape is chosen as a safety barrier. Not only is it very visible to the animals, but the flat surface, if an animal does run into it, a horse does bump into it, it's smooth and does not have a tendency to cut or slice as a wire product probably would. So when a horse touches it, it's safe, and it has many, many small internal wires woven through the poly that provide a shock to the animal.
We'll get into that. So to describe this for people who don't know what we're talking about, it's about an inch and a half wide, and it looks like tape.
It looks like webbing.
Like a web of some sort. But yet it's got a heck of a lot of strength to it. And it has the wires through it that make it electric, that make it hot.
That's correct.
So is the whole thing hot, or just the top and bottom hot, or?
It's just the places where the wires run through that are hot. And certain tapes have the wires spread out across the whole surface. Other tapes have wires much closer together, so like bands or streaks of wire running through it.
How are yours set up? Or
we have some that are both ways.
Oh, okay. You have different kinds. The one we use is the super duty heavy, super strong kind.
Yes. You probably have the best kind we actually make. It's reinforced. It's a high number of wires. It has a 20-year warranty. It's a high quality, very strong product.
It was rated, one of the same reasons that Jennifer piped onto this one when she was reading the specs, and by the way, I have to say, too, that's something that not all fencing companies are really good at, is putting all the different specs down about each of the products, and you guys are terrific at that. You have a great website, and it really goes through all of that. But one of the things that we needed a tape that was going to hold up if one of these tree branches fell on it, and this thing's rated to 900 pounds.
900 pounds, that's right. And,
the pole's probably going to, the post is going to bend before the wire.
Beaker could sit on it, yeah.
The plastic pieces that hold it to the post will probably break before the rope.
Yeah, more than likely. Right.
Which is okay. I mean, that's kind of what you're kind of hoping happens, actually.
You need to have a weak part in every mechanical device or any operation. And the insulators, though they're strong, you want them to break first. That way, it provides a level of safety that if the horse does get tangled up in the fencing, something gives and the animal doesn't get hurt.
That's true, yeah.
The tape is still hanging there.
Yeah, it'll spring back up and most likely keep him enclosed, yeah.
That's correct.
Well, now, the polywire, now that is enough to explain polywire and why that might be an option for people.
Well, polyrope is one thing, and polywire is a smaller version of polyrope.
Okay.
Usually rope is, like we know of rope traditionally, it's about a quarter inch. It's a twist product. It's what you buy at the hardware store and you want to put up a clothesline or something.
Right.
It looks like that, about that size. The same type of wires that's in the tape is woven through or twisted inside the rope as well. And then a poly wire is a much thinner product. It's probably less than an eighth of an inch, a sixteenth of an inch wide. It has fewer wires in it. That's mainly used for smaller animals, goats, and around gardens and that sort of thing. Not very often is it used with horses. The rope and the poly rope are, you might want to change that a little bit, mark that little spot right there. Poly tape and poly rope are most often used on horse applications. Poly wire is not so much used for horses.
I guess because of the visual aspect, because the poly rope being thicker is relatively easy to see when compared with poly wire. Is that kind of how it works?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Yeah.
And that was always one of the biggest problems with the old wire that we used to use. They couldn't see it. We used to have to hang the red flags all over the fences and, you know, just so they could see it. And at night, they couldn't see it at all.
But the white poly tape that you put up is very visible from a great distance. And it does move in the wind some, and so it's very obvious. And electric fence is also not just a physical barrier, but it's a mental barrier. Once your animal learns that it's there, they tend to stay away from it without even having to be aggressive toward the fence.
Yeah, and I noticed we were out trail riding with some friends the other day, and we got to a juncture in the trail where part of the group headed east and part of the group headed west to go back home, and I could very clearly see our 4-strand white poly tape fence from across a 50-acre field, which kind of impressed me because I knew you could see it comfortably from within the paddock, which is relatively small. But when you put it up according to Field Guardian's recommendations, which is what we did, we asked you guys how we should do it, and you told us exactly what we needed to do, it is a very clear visual barrier, and I'm very impressed with that.
It's good. And it doesn't look bad either. It's a nice visual. As long as it's installed correctly and appropriately, it doesn't bring people a negative attention towards your fence.
Right. From across the field, it just looked like white fence.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that was very nice. I knew my horse could see it clearly, I could see it clearly, and it gave a pleasant appearance to the back of our property.
Now, we're going to talk in future episodes here, now that we've discussed what the various options are for horse people, if you're looking for a temporary, you go for the poly rope or the poly tape. We're going to talk a little bit, as we're coming up to, about what type of posts. One of the problems with the green metal T-posts is the tops tend to get sharp. You're pounding them in with the sledgehammers the way we used to have to do it. Boy, that's a lot easier with the drivers now. But we're going to talk about that, too, about how to make these temporary fences safe for the horses. So they're not only do they look good and they're strong, but they're also safe. And we're going to discuss that in some upcoming episodes here as well. If you want to find out more about the Field Guardian fencing system, it's fieldguardian.com. That's fieldguardian.com. And tune in because we have a lot more helpful advice for you as we come down the pike here in the next 3 episodes of our fencing special. Well, Jamie, what kind of fencing did you have that came pretty when you bought it? Oh, is Jamie there?
Yeah, say that again. I'm sorry, I lost you there.
What kind of fencing do you have? What kind of fencing came with the property when you bought it?
We have it's not aluminum, stainless pipe fencing, because you can't have wood out here in the sun because it just dissipates. It's just gone. You know, it just burns up, it warps. So we've got pipe fencing, and then it's also got all the way around the property like a no climb. So also the dogs, it's dog fenced. But I did have to fence off one part of the area that I wanted to extend my pasture a little bit. So I did go ahead and put some electric fencing in. And I wish I would have known about these fantastic posts, because you know what I did? I'm so cheap. Instead of going to Lowe's and like buying those metal things, they just, like you said, they looked really dangerous. So I bought PVC pipes, and I cut them in half. They were like, 10-foot PVC pipes. And about like maybe an inch thick, and I drilled a hole through the tops of them, and I fed my electric fence, because I just got the like little round wire. I fed that through the PVC, and I drove the PVC into the ground. I used like a spike and made a hole, and then put the PVC in the ground. Seriously though, if a horse decided to lean on my fence, they would be gone. But fortunately, they're all, it's galvanized steel. You're right. Fortunately, none of them even want to challenge the tiny little yellow, which is amazing to me, but the tiny little yellow rope that goes around with this teeny tiny little shock, they totally avoid. And yes, I have white PVC pipes sticking out of my ground.
You know, they make for $1 a little post you could have done that with. Just
I didn't know that. All I knew was that was the metal things that are like death traps, you know, those green things that you stick into the ground. Like you said, you pound them and then the horse rubs up against it and then they like lacerate their shoulder. I didn't know that they had the, like you said, those little plastic things you just press into the ground. No, I could have worked a lot less hard had I known.
And now you'll hear too what we did. We used wooden posts for the corners because we can do that here, and then we used the green T-posts, the ones you're talking about. But they make caps that go over the top of them now, that your tape actually, or wire, or you could use the rope wire too, run through the caps, but it protects the horse from rubbing on the top of the post, which has solved that problem. But you're right, it was a problem. For years, you know, they didn't have that kind of crap. We just used the green posts, and we put miles of that stuff up at our old farm 25 years ago. And the little – and that wire, you got the yellow wire, man, it used to just be wire, and you couldn't see that worth anything. It's come a long way in 20 years, that's for sure. Speaking of, you know, you talked about being – this is your favorite time of year. You got Rolex, and you got the Derby and everything. But do you have something else that you're looking forward to? And I'm going to play you a little something to get you in the mood. At the end of this month, Jamie's leaving us for 2 weeks, and she's heading off to Spain for vacation. So not only do you have this, but then right after this, you're going to be useless. I mean, pretty much for the next month, Jamie's going to be checked out. She's going to show up in the show and go, whatever, I'm going to Spain. And that's all we're going to hear
starts,
for 3 weeks.
That starts Monday morning, so you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to give you a little flavor of that with a little of the Rigel Band's song, Bandura, that will give you a little Spanish flavor. And we're going to do that right after this message from Equestrian Collection. Howdy, everybody. Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I'm speaking to Debbie, and we have our Equestrian Collection's Product of the Week.
Hi, Glenn. This week, we're going to highlight the upcoming Summer Olympics. The equestrian teams will be there, and we want to support them. And so does Iridian. Iridian now is offering the London 2012 T-shirt. It's got a picture of a horse on it with kind of a Union Jack on there. You can see it's red, white, and blue, and it's in stock and ready to go now. We also have an American version of this, and that is called the Miss America T-shirt. These are all in lady sizes, and please get them at www.equestriancollections and support our Olympic teams.
Well, you go to Equestrian Collections and search for Iridian London or Iridian Miss America, and you'll find these particular shirts. I like them. They're good looking. I think these are going to be good sellers for the summertime.
And here's another thing. Don't forget that Iridian is actually spelled I Ride On. IRIDEON.
I Ride On at EquestrianCollections.com. This is for you, Jamie. Thank you. was Bandura by the Rigel Band. You can find them at rigel-band.com. Our listener, Shay, was the one on the fiddle there. And I noticed Shay's been commenting a lot more on the Facebook page, so I'm sure she's listening. Howdy, Shay.
Well, Shay, let me just tell you, darling, that right now I can smell the sweat of the Andalusian horse as I am tasting the tapas, the multitude of tapas that are spread out on the table, drinking my sangria. I'm out. I'm done. You just caused me to go to Spain right now. I'm done.
The heck with the derby. We don't even need the derby. So
I'm packing. I'm going to start packing.
You're ready, huh? What are you going to wear? Are you going to, like, did you buy a sombrero and, you know, some Western conchos and things like that?
Glenn, seriously, I think that's a little racist. No, just kidding. No, I have not purchased a sombrero for Spain. I will not be attending any bullfights while I'm there. Definitely don't believe in the whole bullfighting thing.
Me either, by the way.
I don't know what to wear. You know, it's like, do I go with the riding pants, the boots and breeches, or do I go with, like, my jeans and half traps, or do I, you know, obviously I take my helmet, and my husband's going to have to take his helmet, too. I don't know what to wear. We will have to talk about that leading up to it, and maybe we'll talk to Kathy, or Patty, about her fashion for when Jennifer gets to interview her a little bit later today. Maybe she has some ideas for me, because I have to look good.
Well, you know what? We need to get Darlie. We need to get Darlie from Equitrek and Travel, because she's been there. She'll know exactly what you're supposed to wear. We'll need to
Perfect.
Do that.
Perfect. Perfect. Yep. Booker.
All right. Speaking of fashion. That was
Oh, cute. Yeah. Speaking
that's
of fashion. That's me. Sorry. I was just reading. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about fashion with Lisa, because Lisa from the Chronicle of the Horse was at the Nations Cup, and she wrote an article about fashions at Nations Cup versus fashions at Rolex. And I'd love to know, because probably the Nations Cup people dress a little bit better than people at Rolex. So we'll say good morning to Lisa. Hey, girl.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Did I hear that you are at Leslie Wiley's wedding right now?
I am. I mean, the wedding's not today, so I'm not actually talking to you from the wedding, but
obviously.
I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee this week for that purpose. So
that's so cool. I didn't know that you guys had that kind of connection. I need you to do a little recon for me.
Okay,
because Leslie Yeah, I'm sure you can. Leslie came on our show, and we talked a little bit about fashion with Leslie, and she showed me a picture of some shoes that she may or may not wear for the ceremony, and I really want her
stripper
to wear
shoes.
Her
stripper shoes.
Yeah.
Stripper shoes.
Yeah, the gold ones with the flames, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does she plan on wearing those, Lisa?
I haven't talked to her this week. Last I had talked to her, I think she had, like, maybe another pair of gold ones that she was thinking of wearing in the ceremony, and then she was going to transition to the gold with flames for, like, after the ceremony and the reception and the after party and the after party. So
yeah, that's going to be a good time. Time for sure.
It's for sure going to be
those.
Awesome.
Yeah, she won't wear those flame shoes for long, though. Let me just tell you, those heels are huge. And they're not stripper heels, Glenn, because strippers have clear heels. Clear heels. So they can match every outfit. All right,
oh,
Lisa,
clever.
Talk to us.
I never thought of that. That's a good concept.
Well, if you ever become a stripper, Lisa, now you know what to wear.
Sometimes I think it might be the only way to support this horse hobby, but I haven't turned to that yet.
Well, tell
us about
the
Chronicle
will be fashion.
Thrilled to hear that.
Yeah. I'm sure they're thrilled with me right now.
Well, go ahead. Tell us about your article and tell us about the Nations Cup, first of all.
So, yeah, I was at the World Cup in Sertogenbosch, which is in the Netherlands. It's about an hour outside of Amsterdam. And I'd never been to a World Cup before, and it's actually been a little while since I've been in Europe. And so I was totally unprepared for the awesome things that would be at the trade fair. Because, like, I mean, I love the Rolex trade fair as much as the next person. I could spend all my money there. But there were just so many things that I hadn't ever seen at the one in the Netherlands. We have a photo gallery up online. I'll post it on you guys' Facebook page because it's amazing. They had boots in every imaginable color and style and texture. There were snakeskin boots and alligator pattern boots, and brown boots are really the thing right now. I was really having to restrain myself from buying a pair of beautiful brown boots. And then the coats. Everyone right now is wearing these Anima Mix one. They're absolutely beautiful. They're that sort of like technical fabric. So, you know, they're not like the old style wool coats where you just sweat and sweat and sweat and sweat and sweat. They're this modern fabric, but then they all have little, like, they all have bling. They have bling around the collar and bling on the pockets and bling on the collars, like these little rhinestones. And they're just awesome. And then that was the other thing is, like, everyone is totally into bling right now. You can buy little polar wraps that have rhinestones on them. You can buy, like, open front jumping boots that have interchangeable rhinestones.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm going to post this right now because you guys have to see this. It's amazing.
Well, I'm looking at your article and at your photos that you have, and oh,
yep.
My God, snake skin boots or snake skin half chaps? What?
I know.
And these are snake skin tall boots. Tall boots, yeah. Yeah, it's going western on us here.
We were talking to, you know, one of the girls who works in the booth, and we were like, do people actually ride in these? And she was wearing a pair, and she was like, I don't ride in mine. I just use them, you know, for going out or whatever. But, oh, my gosh, they're stunning. And you think, like, they probably wouldn't last very long if you did ride in them. But I think with that kind of thing, that's not really, you know, you're not really going for longevity as much as pure awesomeness.
Speaking of pure awesome, keep flipping through the pictures, Jamie, and you're going to come across the gold-plated Mercedes SUV. Was that, like, real gold?
I'm not sure. I was a little scared to get really close to it because, you know, I could just see myself, like, somehow damaging it and then handing me a bill for who knows how much. But yeah, that was another thing that was really, really cool. It's just shiny things everywhere.
Well, I'm looking at some of these pictures and there's snakeskin seats on the jump saddle. There's custom saddles with like colorful knee rolls. And then, you know, I gotta wonder, Lisa, cause you go to California to go to a little horse trial called Galway Downs, and then they're sending you to the freaking Netherlands. Are you kidding me? How awesome is your job?
I know. It's pretty great. Yeah. I mean, I don't like to brag about it, you know. but no, it's really fun. It's definitely a cool thing to get to travel around and see everything. But I have to say, like, going out to Galway, Californians have some pretty awesome fashion too. They're definitely up on their fashion.
Well, tell us what it was like over there. I was just going to say, what do they wear in Germany? Are they all dressed up? Now, Rolex, you go there, everybody's in baseball hats and boots. You know, what do they wear in Germany?
It was overall much more fashionable, and the horse show is done up in a really amazing way. You know, it's an indoor horse show, so everyone's inside, and there's just this atmosphere that it's a really sort of, like, high-class event. Not that Rolex isn't. Like, I'm in no way dissing Rolex. I love Rolex. It's probably the most fun you can have to go there. But this was very much, you know, they were selling, they had champagne booths and really high-end mattresses, and it's, like, you know, Rolex watches, and it's just... it's just a totally different atmosphere. So people were quite dressed up. You know, people were in some very fancy outfits. Pants, like tight pants and boots are probably you know, the most popular thing that we saw from just people watching, you know, like super skinny jeans that have like a little bit of risers on them or something with tall boots just for wearing. That was what we kept seeing, like every person was wearing boots. I guess boots are in right now. But if you're into fashion, you probably already knew that. But if you're me, then you maybe didn't.
Yeah, and that's the, I think, the strict difference between where you were. I mean, again, you're in the Netherlands, okay, and going to somewhere like Rolex. Like, I think that the boots that are in at Rolex are the Dewberry boots. You know, you see so many chicks in these Dewberry boots. It does not matter how hot it is outside. These people wear their boots over their jeans. And I think the fashion stops right there. Like, that's it. I mean, me, I wore a pair of Crocs on Sunday because my feet hurt so bad from Saturday. Yeah, we are seriously not into fashion at Rolex.
Yeah, it's a little bit, I mean, it's a little bit practical too. You think at Rolex, like you're walking and walking and walking and walking, and it is hot or it is rainy or it is cold. You know, when you're at the World Cup, you are completely contained in this indoor. You never have to go outside once you get there. And so you can wear heels and you don't have to worry about, like, tripping over, you know, a clod of dirt, or you don't have to worry about getting rained on or being cold. Like, it's a much more controlled environment. So I think it makes it, you know, obviously a lot easier for people to wear something that's fashionable as opposed to something that's, like, just plain practical.
Obviously. Now, before we let you go, what is the one thing that you learned from being over there, and the one thing you really took away from being over in the Netherlands?
You know, I think the biggest thing was how cool it is to have spectators who are really knowledgeable and really involved. Because I don't know if you guys have been to many dressage shows here in the U.S., but they can be a little bit of a sad, like, somber event. You know, there are no spectators, and if there are any, it's usually, like, the rider's parents or something. But there, you know, the stands were absolutely full. It was sold out, even for the dressage. And the whole crowd was, like, they knew so much about dressage that if a horse made even the slightest mistake, like if it just stepped back out of the piaf for a second, the whole crowd in unison goes, and it's just, it's very cool. It had a very different atmosphere that I think would be, it would be neat to have it here in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the only time I've ever seen that was Rolex, when somebody would take a rail down or cut a corner or something like that. You're like, oh, my God.
Everyone. So, it's very cool.
But every show's like that. That's really cool. Well, Lisa, thanks for joining us. You can find Lisa's article at the Chronicle of the Horse. We posted a link to it on our Facebook page. You've got to check out these pictures. People over in Europe are way ahead of us in the fashion world, so... Go ahead and check that out. It's chronicleofconofhorse.com or on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. Thank you, Lisa.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Make you want to go shopping for snakeskin tall boots to wear in dressage?
No, because you'll get spun out of your dressage test in about 5 seconds in the U.S. for wearing something like that. Oh, I love it. Well, hey, speaking of eventing, before we get going, I do have a little bit of news for you guys on Mark Todd. Mark Todd had his Olympic horse, his Olympic hope, is a horse named Land Vision, and he is now out of it. This is the horse that he won badminton on last year. He's going to be out for at least 3 months for the recurrence of an old tendon injury. So he's one of the best four-star horses in the world, won badminton in 2011. Obviously, very sad for the New Zealand team. So Mark Todd's horse, Land Vision, is out for the Olympics.
Does he have any others? Do you know? Was this his only hope?
No, this is Mark Todd. I'm sure he's got like William Fox Pitt, 9 other ones. So no, he does have Campino, and also I think 1 or 2 other ones. But he did say that Campino is good in all phases, but he's not as experienced as Land Vision. So I just love it when they call these 4-star horses a bit green. Like, it's not green. It's a little green. I'll show you what green is, okay? So, he does have at least one more. And he's also got Grass Valley.
Well, we're going to talk more about the Derby tomorrow. We'll be back. We'll also have our interview with Patty and Dean of Mucho Macho Man owners and Kathy, their trainer. Talk to them. Mucho Macho Man runs tomorrow as well in one of the races tomorrow. You know, we talk about the Kentucky Derby, but that's actually only part of the race card. We got a whole bunch of races tomorrow and then a whole bunch of races before the Derby on Saturday. You know, there are some big races in addition to the Derby, and sometimes we forget to mention that. Now, we did have, if you remember right, our friend Reese Koffler Stanfield joined us when she goes out on Friday, Derby Friday, and usually goes every year. I'll have to find out if she can call us from the tailgate again.
She was way too drunk last time.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning. That was the funny part.
I know. That's what I like about it. So, yeah, we'll definitely try to get a hold of her. It was entertaining. She was halfway into a couple of Bloody Marys. And you can't blame a woman for that. So I love it.
I think they must have been the first ones to show up at the parking lot for tailgating, too, at that early in the morning. I'll get a hold of her today, and we'll find out if she's heading over there. Plus, I'll have the 10 fun ways to pick a Kentucky Derby horse without knowing racing. We'll do that tomorrow as well. And our contest. So we still need somebody to play against me in the Derby trivia contest. It won't be hard. You're guaranteed to win.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed victory at this point.
Yeah, no problem with that. Well, that's it for today. Let's get out of here. We'll be back again tomorrow.
All right, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Go ride your horse and spay, neuter, and geld something, anything, except for your husband. Don't do that.
I have another. Woo-hoo. 19. I have another. 19. I have another. Coming from the outside.
Mr. Calling. Could have been a race caller. That's awesome.